Hey, Dinks! Welcome to Dentists in the Know. This is your backstage pass for current trends, politics, and education in the dental world. I'm Dr. Jeff Horowitz. With me is Dr. Jennifer Bell, you know her as JB, and Dr. Chad Duplantis. We are all practicing dentists, we are all educators, and we are all business owners. Our job is to bring all of you in the know. Everyone, it is Wednesday. That means it's hump day, and that means it's also time for Hump Day Happy Hour with Dentists in the Know. This is your backstage pass for current trends, politics, and education in the dental world. It is live, and as always, over a cocktail tonight, I thought I'd do something a little bit different, doing an Alsatian white blend that I had at a wine tasting several weeks back, and it is delicious, although you don't often hear me complaining about any wine that's put in my hand, but this one in particular happens to be pretty good. As you can see, I am with one of my best friends in the entire world and an outstanding dentist in person, Dr. Jennifer Bell. Unfortunately, Dr. Chad Duplantis is still tending to his daughter, who has unfortunately been ill. Been in the hospital. We wish him and his family and Ava all of our best wishes and all of our prayers for a speedy recovery. We miss you, Chad, and we love the Duplantis family. We'll miss you tonight, but making fun of you is still not off limits. I'm sorry. That's just how we roll, brother. So anyway, as you know, we are all dentists, we are all business owners, and we are all educators. And our job is to bring all of you in the know. And that's exactly what we're going to do. So, Jennifer, how are you doing? And how was your week? I know we've been busy worrying about Chad for the last week or two. So, you know, we haven't really talked about much else. So how goes it?
It goes pretty well, actually. It's been, I don't know how Q1 was for you, but I felt like we were together actually a fair amount. It felt like it was one thing after another. And April has been a little bit calmer, at least from that perspective. You know, obviously we've been dealing with some of our issues with our friends and stuff, but just the overall demand seems to have calmed down a little, and it's been a good reset, I think, to sort of catch up on some things that needed to be done, mentally have a little bit of downtime, because, man, we were like gangbusters. Yeah. And by the way, Q1 2025 is already shaping up to be exactly the same. So,
yeah, it certainly will. I that wouldn't be surprising at all. But listen, that's how the dental calendar works, right?
Right.
We know, right? Like, right as soon as the kids get out of school, there's going to be that week or two of cancellations and no shows. And, oh, I forgot. And, oh, vacation Bible school. And, oh, this or that. And we always know it happens like that. And right when the kids go back to school, we seem to experience the same thing. Although this year, it seemed like less than usual. Not sure why.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Well, what do you say we bring our guest on? Because we've got
a pretty cool guest.
Okay. I'm going to introduce him, if that's okay.
Please.
Okay, I will. So, David, I'm going to bring you up, and I'm going to make you blush while I talk about you a little bit. So, David is just a great fella that I met through the Piper Study Club. And what's really funny is I used to think he was a periodontist and wondered why he was learning so much about the temporomandibular joint and why I would see him at Restorative Academy meetings. Like, why is this? Okay, maybe I get the Restorative Academy, but the whole joint thing, I don't know, not so much. But anyway, you know, David has always been a big advocate for organized dentistry. And as I said, he's from a family of dentists. He is the youngest first vice president to ever be elected to the American Dental Association. And that's because of his dedication from a young age to into becoming involved and showing that you can make a difference even as a young dentist. So he is practicing now in the Albuquerque area of New Mexico. A master of the Academy of General Dentistry. He's a graduate of the Dawson Academy and the Piper Study Group, which is where I got to know him. He's a fellow of the International Congress of Dentists and just an all-around phenomenal guy who I am proud to call a friend. So, David, we appreciate you coming on to share some thoughts about organized dentistry with us.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, it's great being here. Talking about young dentists, you know, it was exciting. Last week, I was in Washington, D.C. We had the ADA Dentist and Student Lobby Day, and we had over 1,200 dentists and dental students there. And I mean, just seeing the enthusiasm of the students and going around and visiting with our members of Congress, you could tell that was starting to leave an impact. I mean, it was shocking seeing some of the congressional staffers when some of the students were going around the room and they were saying, yeah, I'm going to graduate with about $500,000 in just dental school debt. And, you know, their jaws were dropping so low, I could tell they didn't have any jaw issues. But
it's okay. It's all going to be forgiven.
Well, we'll see. I guarantee you, if it is all forgiven, it's going to be the day after I make my last payment.
Of course it will be. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, David, what were some of the, usually you have a few either pieces of legislation that are currently being discussed and you want to make sure you're communicating your viewpoints on those things that are coming up or just general hot topics to keep in mind. What were some of the things both the dental students and the dentists were talking to their legislators about?
Well, a lot of these issues were bills that we've talked about before. You know, one of the most aggravating things from Congress is, especially with the Congress that we have right now, is that it takes forever to get anything through. You know, this I think was like the second or third time that we were talking about the Doc Access Act, which is basically a non-covered services bill at the federal level. And honestly, it's a great thing because it's the first step that we can move towards ERISA reform. And so, you know, all the changes that we make at a statewide level, you know, and I'm really excited. We had a huge bill that we passed about a year ago here in New Mexico. And those only apply to roughly half the plans. But those that are the federal plans, and we've got a huge federal presence here in the state, you know, those rules don't apply. So, you know, we're still subject to things like virtual credit cards and non-binding predeterminations. So, you know, that's the first step to really making sure that insurance reform is something that's meaningful.
And I think it was, I have to go back and refresh my memory, but I think it was California recently that came forward with some additional legislation, just trying to have clarity on when we call and ask for benefit information, are you a self-employed or a self-insured plan? Are you, you know, should we follow state rules for you or federal rules for you? Because we are left oftentimes on the ground when we're talking to patients unclear whether or not this plan is going to fall under state regulation for non-covered service or federal regulation for non-covered service. And there's no consistency amongst the two and no clarity from our perspective what the EOB is going to end up saying when it comes back for the patient.
Yeah, it's just all a big, huge, confusing mess.
Yeah.
Isn't it? One of the other bills that we talked about is the READY Act, which is looking at trying to make sure that when dental students or medical students go into a residency program, their student loans do not start accruing interest while they're in those residency programs. And I think that's really crucial right now. Talking with some of the students, they were saying that right now the interest rate is 8, 9, 10% on some of their student loans. I mean, that's a huge chunk of change to go through a residency. that you're often paying for.
Yeah.
Any discussion on the actual cost of a medical or dental education, on limiting costs or funding for some of the schools that are educating this next generation of physicians and dentists?
Well, one of the things that that's not really a legislative issue, because it's hard to cap how much something costs, put a cap on that, or at least Congress is kind of not crazy about doing that. But I think that is something that the ADA is very concerned about. And we just recently approved a task force that is looking on, it's led by several dental school deans, focused on what we can do to bring down the cost of education. You know, it was funny. Right after Washington, D.C., I went to Kansas City, which is where I went to dental school. I went to school at UMKC, and I got to do a lunch and learn with the students there. And it was also my 15-year dental school class reunion. So, boy, I've been going through quite a bit of nostalgia the last couple of days. You know, and it doesn't help that my 41st birthday is right around the corner. But
Shut up if you knew it was good for you.
I'm going to be quiet.
Someone just got his AARP card in the mail, so we can't really be complaining too much.
Oh, it came a while ago.
I get those weekly. But you look at the expense that it has just to educate a student through school right now. These schools are barely making ends meet. In terms of, especially like the public schools. And so, finding some way where what we've seen is the amount of support, especially with the public universities that they've provided for the schools, has just been drawn back so significantly. It's making the more affordable places a lot less affordable. So it's a multifactorial problem. I don't have a solution right off the top of my head, but it's something that I can tell you we're really concerned about, because, I think is really the crux of where a lot of our problems are coming from. You know, I was lucky enough to only graduate about $225,000 in debt, and, I'm almost done, but, It's something that I know a lot of folks are struggling with.
Hey, Dinks podcast listeners. After the show, be sure and rate and review your favorite Dink. I mean, rate and review Dinks as one of your favorite podcasts.
I heard that.
We'd love to hear what you have to say. Thanks for listening in. See you next time.
Well, has there been any talk amongst the board as far as, we're seeing a lot of private investment into some of the dental clinics associated with some of the dental school to offset some of the costs. And obviously there's some concern about that, about some of the corporate entities being allowed to have a stake in the dental clinics. Obviously, they are not allowed to own the dental schools themselves. But they are allowed to have a stake in the dental clinics themselves. But is there any concern about the influence that now casts upon some of the corporate entities that are out there in the dental world?
I think that there's definitely concern. But it goes back to the question of, why do you rob banks? That's where the money's at. And fundamentally, if I can appreciate it, if these educators are looking for ways to balance their books and make sure they can maintain their programs, they're having to look for funding from wherever they can. And to be honest with you, I'm not really sure having a corporate entity's name on the side of a building really is going to leave that much of an impression on the student. But,
Well, and the reality is they are employing a significant number of students right out of dental school. I mean, they are providing, you know, whether you like it or not, they are providing a source of income for these students as they grow their skill set and become more confident and comfortable as clinicians. It is a part of the many, for many of us, including myself, the early journey in your career, regardless of where it ends up leading you. So, at, you know, they are a fundamental player in how young doctors get paid and manage to pay their loan payment every month.
And yeah, I think I'm reminded of a quote from the late 20th century philosopher 50 Cent. Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah. Yay.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, not trying to invoke a lot of controversy here, but I mean, it's a conversation that I think really needs to be kind of out in the open. I mean, you know, how serious are we about lowering the cost of education, and what all is it going to take, and what are we willing to accept, and what are we not willing to accept, you know? And so, you know, I think, you know, just, you know, we were talking earlier before the show, and one of the things you were saying is how easy it is to be a critic, you know, to just sit behind a keyboard and say, oh, I don't agree with this, or oh, this is no good, or oh, I hate this. But it's much harder to actually get involved in and make change, which I admire you so much for doing from a young age. But I guess the point is here is, how do we get more people from behind the keyboard to say, you know what, enough of this talk online and enough of yelling at each other online. Here's how I can make a difference in organized dentistry. How do we get people excited about that again? And can a young dentist right out of school do that?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you a little bit about my origin story. You know, my second year of dental, I was always someone who was involved with student government and things like that. My second year of dental school, I was invited to be an alternate delegate to the Missouri House of Delegates for the MDA. And I remember there was one resolution that was being debated on, and I couldn't remember, you know, I can't remember the specifics of it, but I kept saying, asking the person next to me, I said, do I have mic privileges? Because I forgot to comment on this. And he said, David, if you've got an idea or a comment that's going to make our profession better, you not only have a right to speak up, you have a responsibility to do that. You know, getting out of dental school, my dad was the vice president of the State Dental Association here. And so I was kind of seen as the crown prince of dentistry. And I got involved really early. It was a great way, you know, some people had, you know, some fathers and sons had, you know, little league teams and things like that. We had going to the Capitol and working on legislation that would affect dentistry. And I think one of the things that we all see problems that we encounter every single day, the things that cause us to grind our own teeth. And, you know, it's easy to sit back and say, why isn't this problem being fixed? It's harder to come up with a solution to it. And then it's even harder to show up and be there, present your solution, be open to criticism. You know, I've probably brought to my state house of delegates close to about 50 resolutions over the last 15 years. And a lot of those, several of them have gotten shot down, you know, and that's fine. Most others have gotten modified. And from there, several of those have gone on to become national policy. And so it's one of those things where if you're involved, you have a voice. You know, that's been something that I've found that has given me so much power, that if there's something I see that's bothering me, something that I see that's challenging me, I know what we can do to try, and I can look for solutions, and I'm not afraid to stand up and present those solutions.
What's kept you motivated? I've been in much like you, I've been in organized dentistry. Well, I was in organized something long before I can really remember. And then when I decided to become a dentist, then I got involved in organized dentistry. So kind of like you, I think it's just in your blood. I think maybe you're just always sort of driven to it.
Actually, JB was on the executive board of North Carolina AGD at age 8.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Which doesn't speak much for the future of dentistry in North Carolina. Anyway, because I can only really talk about primary teeth. But anywho, how do you stay motivated and not become disenfranchised? Because even as a leader myself, there are years where I think, oh, I'm not making the change I thought I could. It seems like either you're banging your head against the wall to organize dentistry as a collective group, or more frustratingly, to all the outside powers that end up having a lot more say, influence, power, money, whatever, that continue to sort of try to dictate how we practice. So what have you found to be personal motivations, wins that you've had that kept you coming back for more, so that you don't lose steam in the battle of continuing to lobby and push forward and advocate for dentists?
You know, I think one of the things that I've seen is those wins are great, but I can tell you about as many times, you know, when I've had something that's gotten shot down, I'm like, really, guys? Really? Mm-hmm. You know, you go home, you have a good glass or bottle of wine, and, you know, you wake up the next morning and you figure out how to get that through. You know, it's in our district at the ADA, which comprises 7 states, we've had several resolutions we've brought up and they've been shot down. And it's really funny because the next year there's usually someone else or a council or, you know, some other entity that's bringing up that same resolution and it sails through. You know, I think one of the big things is, you know, it's part of the game. You're going to have wins, you're going to have losses. And, you know, you just chalk it up to that. You look at the bigger picture and you realize, have I moved, had moved the discussion in a different direction? You know, you talked about NCOIL a little bit earlier. And I don't see, you know, NCOIL is a starting discussion point. You know, that's what gets the foot in the door. Now that puts MLR and DLR in a position to where the state associations can shape it into what they can get through. You know, I'm not crazy about having a specific number there because that could be something that's doable in one state, but not necessarily another. You know, and if we're looking at policies that can have to reach across the spectrum from Massachusetts to Alabama, you know, there's a lot of daylight there. And so I think that, I think being flexible, being nimble, looking at ways to try and refigure things out. One of the things that I did when I had a few things shot down one year was I turned around and talked to a bunch of my buddies. And I said, you were at the House of Delegates. I need you there. And so we started filling up some of those seats. And, you know, for several years, we've had one of the youngest houses of delegates in the entire country. You know, several years, it's been over 50% of new dentists. And, you know,
that's awesome.
We're going to be the folks who are impacted by those policies. We need to have a seat at the table helping to shape them.
That's I'm just thinking back about being able to take it on the chin. And I will say that when there was a time where I was a part of the House of Delegates along with Jennifer in the AGD, and we had a lot of successes. I mean, but when something didn't go our way, it really was a blow. It was a blow to not only, you know, it's a blow to your personal ego. And I think that that's a difficult thing for dentists to really deal with, you know, in the environment that we practice and we have so many successes. And so when we make ourselves vulnerable like that and put ourselves out there and things don't go our way, it can really be difficult for us. And so, you know, I know you've given part of the message, but how do you encourage somebody to get in and tell them, look, some of this crap is just not going to go your way. And as passionate as you are, you need to carry that to the floor, but it just may not go your way. And you may have to seek another year or another 2 years, you know, before things roll around. I mean, what's your message to young dentists in how to deal with that when getting involved in organized dentistry?
Well, one of the things I look at, and I think it's something we can relate to in just the dental office. I mean, how many times have you had a day where you've gotten 20 compliments? You know, your patients have just been glowing about you. And then the second to last patient in the day says, "Eh, I don't know if I think I like the shade on that tooth. It's not quite the right shade, or it looks a little funny." It's not even an insult, but it's something that, you know, I go the drive home, I'm like, I had a great, you know, on paper, I probably had a good day, but you know, that one comment turned the day from good to crap. And so I think part of it is dentists, we're perfectionists. You know, I remember there was a sign in one of my pre-dental labs or pre-doctoral labs that said, "Expect perfection, reluctantly settle for excellence." And when excellence is something that you're almost ashamed of, that's a really tough spot to be in. You know, if we do expect a lot of perfection out of ourselves. And so I also think back to a comment that I've been saying quite a bit lately. You know, I call it the original sin of dentistry, and it's when we let perfection be the enemy of the good. You know, I can't tell you how many times I had a practical exam where I was thinking, this is solid. This is passable. But give me a second and I can make it even better. You know, I can take it from a solid B to an A. And you could hear Morgan Freeman, who's narrating my life story, saying, "No, David couldn't make it into an A." You know, I think that's one of the big problems we have with as dentists. We pursue the perfect, and we miss the good. In terms of that, you know, it's just like I'd tell a colleague at the office: bad days happen. You know, we'll get them again at the, you know, the go around. Let's look for that. Listen to those arguments that they had against what you had to say. And let's figure out some way to see if we can refigure this where it still keeps the crux of what you're going through, but addresses some of the concerns that they had, and, you know, be pragmatic in that way.
Hey, David, for those members who do feel like they can't get their voice heard, or, you know, we know the traditional route for getting your opinions heard, maybe even viewed and voted on by others, traditionally would be through your House and your representatives and those individuals that are elected in your state. But what's a mechanism for any member? Because I would hope any ADA member has a conduit for conversation and for discussion. What's a general mechanism that they could deploy to make sure that their representatives hear their thoughts, that they get straight to an advocate for them who could at least consider their opinions, viewpoints, et cetera, when discussing and debating things in a board meeting or on the House floor?
You know, our contact information is available on the ADA webpage, and it's pretty easy. It's last name and then our first initial at ADA.org. And, you know, I look through every email I get. Actually, mine might be a little bit more difficult because Monsonatus is a really tough name. Can't spell really well. But
maybe Kessler is the way to go. Or, you know, like, do we have a Smith? Is anyone named Smith something?
I'm afraid we don't have a Smith, but, you know, I think that's one of the things. I'd also reach out to your state officers, you know, your state leadership, because so much of what happens, the national leadership gets the attention. But the state is where really the rubber meets the road. The state and locals. I mean, and listen to the feedback folks give you. If they're saying, "Yeah, I don't see this working," or maybe we need to look at this in a different path, be open to that feedback, you know.
Agreed. I think everybody just wants to have an opportunity. And I know I actually have to applaud the ADA because it's been a model that I've used in the AGD actually more recently too. When your strategic plan came forward, the mechanism for town halls for a lot of input and opportunity for discussion from your membership base was really available. And I think a lot of people took advantage of that. And then I think the strategic plan quite accurately reflected the vision of the membership base, as opposed to, you know, I've been on strategic planning groups before and organized groups, and it's kind of a silo exactly. of individuals. Whoever happens to be in the room at the time gets to leverage and lobby for their particular strategic viewpoint. So I have to applaud the ADA for really putting out more of the town hall style opportunities and, you know, to give every member their chance at their strategic plan of where they think ADA should be and where they think general the movement of dentistry in the future should be as well. And I have to say that was an excellent move.
And again, you know, Jennifer, one of the things that I've seen is the more that you're involved, you know, we're looking for leaders at the local levels. I can't think of a single place that isn't. And once you get involved there, you start networking. And networking is absolutely huge in our profession. And, you know, it's allowed me to meet Jeff and you and come on board and have this chat. But it's I'd say take advantage of the networking. Those opportunities to reach out, form connections, form relationships, those are invaluable. And dentistry really is such a small community. Mm-hmm. You know, it helps you really, it's easy to break through a lot of those barriers if you're willing to reach out and ask, well, do you know how I can get in touch with so-and-so? And usually one or two people away, there's, you know, a connection there.
Yeah. David, this is coming up in looking at the chat box and something, the elephant in the room, obviously, is there are certainly a number of dentists who have felt disenfranchised by organized dentistry. And I will say organized dentistry is one of the best things that I've ever done for not just for my career personally, but for me as a person and for the profession, because I know I had some impact on the profession, and I know it also made me better as a person, learning how to voice concerns and how to work out common issues amongst a group. What do you say to some of the dentists who say, well, I just don't see it. I just don't see the value in organized dentistry right now. What is your message to those people? And what is something that they could do or someone that they could potentially reach out to that might come about making a change in helping people want to become more involved and more engaged with organized dentistry?
I think the biggest thing is it goes both ways. You know, as leaders, we need to be willing to listen. And I listen to every comment I can get from folks. You know, if it's positive, if it's negative, I want to hear that because that helps give me the ability to know where we need to go. And I think we do need to have some leadership development that allows for leaders at all levels to take that feedback and recognize it as meaningful, constructive criticism. You know, we need to make sure that our members feel valued with a D in order for them to find value in the association. And I can tell you, working at the upper levels, I can absolutely say without question, you know, we value the feedback from our members. One of the other things is I'd say learn as much as you can about the topic. You know, I often joke that the ADA, you can tell we've been developed, it was developed by dentists because it's a very convoluted system. You know, how many other organizations have two vice presidents, neither of whom ascend into leadership, neither of whom become the actual president, unless there's been some major problem. As dentists, we look for a complex way to do things. But there's often reasons behind that. You know, a lot of times our hands are tied. And it does take sometimes a new outside perspective to kind of realize, hey, this old way, it isn't working. Or we've been doing things this way, sometimes bringing someone in who says, well, why don't we try it another way around? You know, for example, one of the issues I always had was dealing with antibiotic prophylaxis after a joint replacement. It never made any sense to me. You know, I did it as a CYA thing, but I felt like it wasn't.
As does everybody.
As does everybody else.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Right.
And so I wrote a resolution saying, well, why is it that we get in trouble if we're not prophylaxing folks, but the orthopedist can still operate on a patient who's sick, you know, and they don't pay any attention to that. So that then started the discussion about dental preclearance and at what point do we need optimization of dental health in order for the patient to be successfully treated with a surgery there. And we've had two major peer-reviewed studies looking at where we need to go in those directions. It's asking that same question in a slightly different manner that I think sometimes helps move the conversation forward. And so, you know, I for the folks who do feel disenfranchised, I hear you. I mean, I've felt that way before myself. But, you know, is because you run up to people who don't listen to you or may not be encouraging your input, is that a reason to walk away from the game and walk away from having the chance to have your voice heard? I mean, I think every person's voice is meaningful, and you need to have the chance and opportunity and realize that giving that up, that's something you really don't want to give up.
Hey, Jeff, apparently it's come to our attention that you and I suck at the news.
Yeah, Chad, I've actually kind of known that for a while, and that's why what we've had to do is give people more of what they really deserve, which is more JB. So we actually have a segment now called News on the Go with Dennis in the Know. In fact, I like the idea of JB's News on the Go with Dennis in the Know. So stay tuned for that. It's its own podcast. I'm really excited about it, and guess what? There's no Chad and Jeff.
I agree 100%. And even when you're in the trenches, coming back to fight the next day, because if you look at what's happened in medicine and the depletion, essentially, of organized medicine in general and having like a cohesive voice that represents them, I mean, that's a case study for sure of what happens when we as a collective profession start pulling against one another as opposed to pulling together in the same relative direction. And then you, as they say, if you're not on the table or you're on the menu, right? If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And I think medicine has suffered pretty substantially from the fact that they don't have a quite collective voice, particularly in the legislature anymore.
Jennifer, I could not agree more. I think that was really the downfall of medicine, was everybody collectively just feeling that sense of uselessness, leaving the American Medical Association. And all that did was open the doors for big pharma and for other organizations to come in and seize the kind of power that had the doctors stayed together, they could have fought some of these things. And now I think that a lot of them are really regretting that decision at this point because, you know, there's so many other bigger players at the table now that you know, they're always going to be third. They're behind the insurance companies. They're behind, you know, the pharmaceutical companies. And maybe they would have been anyway, but certainly in larger numbers, they would have had a better voice as opposed to where we see general medicine right now. And I still think that there's a chance for dentistry to not end up in that same predicament.
I mean, they're a timeline into our future. And the great thing about seeing into the future is we have a chance to change our present to make sure we don't go down that path. And do we heed the lessons that we're seeing in front of us, or do we go in that same path? I mean, I hope that we stay unified, because I look at it again. I've got hopefully more years of practice ahead of me than I do behind me. I need a strong organization representing my concerns, my needs for my patients. And I'd hate to be in a spot where we're in that same position as medicine, where we lost our voice.
I would put it to the analogy of I'm an American first, and I definitely don't agree with a certain percentage of the things that my government does on my behalf. And there are good years and bad years, in my opinion, of, you know, how I feel about those things. But at the end of the day, I'm cohesively an American, and I haven't given up on that particular viewpoint. And so I'll continue to fight, hopefully by my voice of voting or participating in government or whatever it happens to be an American citizen, regardless of who's in power, because sometimes you win and sometimes you don't. And so you just kind of have to keep trudging along. Before we run out of time, David, I really wanted to talk to you a little bit about workforce, get a little bit of perspective from the ADA on the HPI data that's come out over the last 4 years, 5 years now, have been phenomenal resources for a lot of business case things that I've worked on, just general validation of the way I feel. If I go to HPI and I see the statistical data, also is that the majority of the other individuals in my space feel the same way. It's at least somewhat validating that you feel like you're struggling or, you know, whatever. But I think it's been a great pulse on what's happening. As we collect that data and bring it in, how is the ADA using some of that data? How are they looking at workforce challenges? What are some of the lobbying efforts, discussions that are being had that you can disclose to hopefully help alleviate some of these issues?
Well, believe me, I understand workforce issues completely. I just this week started a assistant who I've been short an assistant for the last 21 months. And so I know how crippling that is. We've been working with several different legislators in Congress to try and find ways. That was one of the other bills that we were lobbying on the Hill. One talking about the Action for Dental Health Act, which hopefully will get, increased funding out there. While we were out there, we found out that my senator has introduced a workforce bill. So I think that there's a lot of positive energy in that direction. The ADA is working with him to try and see what we can do to move these initiatives forward. I think, right now I hear folks all the time and they're saying insurance issues and workforce issues are like 1A and 1B, in terms of top of mind for folks. And we're doing everything we can to try and find ways to do that and look for new and innovative ways to do things. It was interesting being in Missouri. They've got a new program out where they're starting to, the state association is trying to train dental assistants. So, if you've got a good potential candidate, they can work with the state to learn what they need to do there. And we're seeing other states starting to follow that model. So, it's my hope that, like everything else, it's not going to happen quickly. It's going to take some time. But I have hope that this is going to be something that we can find some real common sense, real world solutions to.
Yeah, I agree. Otherwise, somebody's going to find some solutions for us that we might not like.
Exactly.
So much. To your point, I've had we've had one open hygiene position since COVID, and a second one now since January, and no real relief in sight. So, you know, I am equally concerned about the fact that we're opening more and more dental schools, seemingly untamed, because they're having unlimited resources outside of dentistry.
But not the commensurate number of hygiene schools
at all.
No, at all.
Exactly.
And the real shocking piece of data, just to get so in the weeds on the data, is the attrition rate. If they bring in 25, they graduate 12. Like, the attrition rate in dental hygiene school is, I mean, there can't possibly be 50% of the classes that incompetent or decides to do something different halfway through. You don't see that type of attrition rate in dental school. Maybe you see 5%. So that would be a very quick and easy thing to address, to say, why in the world do we have all these accredited dental hygiene programs that can't even come close to graduating the number of people that they're accepting? Like, do we just start interviewing them before they come in to make sure they're legit about wanting to pursue this profession? I don't know. There seems like there's this big problem in the data that could be easily addressed, I think.
It's multifactorial. You know, one of the other things that we're looking at is discussions about where code is going in terms of, some of the requirements for hygiene, for example, this is anecdotal, don't hold me to this, but, you know, one of the concerns I've heard has been in terms of faculty that's required, and that the number of faculty that you need to train a hygienist versus the number of faculty that you need to train a dentist. And that's it's almost on par or slightly off. So there's definitely a lot of discussions that need to be had, and believe me, I hear those concerns. I'm making sure that we get those addressed.
Yeah. Well, David, we're over at this point, and we could keep talking to you for hours. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate everything that you are doing for the dental profession. What would your last parting message be to the average dentist out there who maybe just got out of school a couple of years ago and is maybe thinking about their decision to go into dentistry, you know, a second time, fighting those loans of $400,000 or $500,000 and saying, what did I get myself into? What's your last parting message for those dentists?
I think dentistry is a great profession. I think it's still a great profession. You get to have a chance to make a difference in people's lives. You know, there are definitely challenges out there. But I'd say with those challenges, there come opportunities. And I think it's up to you to try and find ways to look for solutions to those challenges. Come up with a solution and have the courage to stand up and voice those. You know, look, try and find your way out of that puzzle, because when you do, you'll find that it's incredibly empowering and it gives you a voice that you never thought you'd have.
Yeah. Well, David, I can't thank you enough for being on. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for what you're doing for the ADA and for dentistry as a whole. And thanks for being on Dinks.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been a fantastic experience. So,
absolutely.
We
got a little special gift for you when you have one of those days where maybe everything isn't going your way and maybe you want to have that little something at the end of the day. We've got a special gift coming your way, and we appreciate you being on, and I appreciate you as a friend.
Well, thank you. It's been wonderful. And, you know, getting to know you, Jeff, it's been great. So, thank you.
Wow, no one ever says that.
I was going to say, said no one ever.
I'm going to make sure that's a reel. So we can encapsulate it and put it on the internet so it'll live forever.
All right, JB, close us out. We are over time.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready. Close us out.
Y'all, thank you so much for joining us on yet another live Wednesday. 189 live shows now that we've done, which is a pretty big, much like David's level of volunteerism, which, by the way, it's a volunteer job for organized dentistry. So is the Dinks.
Pretty darn close to it, isn't it?
Based on the review of the bank statement, I can tell you it's definitely a volunteer position, which we adore greatly. And it's an honor to be with you each week and to bring you the latest news, trends, politics, and education in the dental space. With that, have a great night. Take care.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
And that wraps up another podcast for Dentists in the Know. On behalf of Dr. Jennifer Bell, Dr. Chad DePlantis, and myself, remember that we've got a great profession, so let's make it a great day, Dinks.